You're listening to The Whole Truth, a Resources Rising Stars podcast.
Some discoveries happen overnight, others emerge gradually throughout a drilling program. This episode of The Whole Truth podcast examines one in the latter category. Talisman Mining has made what looks to be a very substantial discovery with the glorious name of Rip and Tear at its project in the Cobar region of New South Wales. One drill hole will not explain this. This is a series of holes that have intersected some very wide areas of mineralisation. Most notably, they've outlined mineralisation now what looks like over 2.6 kilometres in length, and that remains open. It's clearly got major size to this discovery. Of course, questions of continuity and grade, economic grade, is yet to be answered. But Talisman Managing Director Andrew Monkton gives a very simple explanation of just how big this is, the scope for it to get bigger, and what that can mean in terms of economics for the project. Of course, a big discovery like that in New South Wales, anywhere in Australia for that matter, would have to be on the radar of the big boys. It's got lead, it's got silver, it's got zinc, so it ticks all the right boxes. It's just a question of how big this thing gets and what sort of grade averages out over time. Samples are in the labs, drilling's ongoing. There's plenty happening here. This company is backed by the one and only Kerry Harmanis, famous for his role in driving the great Jubilee nickel discoveries in Western Australia some years ago. He's got deep pockets and he's determined and he's enthusiastic, and Andrew's his front man doing the work. There's plenty to get out of this episode of The Whole Truth podcast. Listen and enjoy. Andrew, let's rip into Rip and Tear, right into the heart of it. Have you got a major discovery in New South Wales at Rip and Tear?
Paul, good morning. Yes, I think we have. But Rip and Tear, I think, is an evolving story rather than an immediate, we've drilled the best hole that you'll ever see kind of story. So far, you know, the first two holes that we drilled were 208 metres of mineralisation. The second one was 105 metres of mineralisation, so it's certainly got scale. The grades are, I like to think of it in silver equivalent terms. The 208 metre intersection is about an ounce and a half of silver equivalent. The 105 metre intersection in the second hole was 1.7 ounces per tonne of silver equivalent, so it's a sizable silver project on a silver equivalent basis. And we're now stepping out. Those two discovery holes were a kilometre apart, and we're now stepping out in 500 metre increments. So far, we've released results out to 1.7 kilometres of strike length. The holes that we're drilling at the moment, and we've just finished the drilling for February, those holes are out to 2.6 kilometres of strike length. So we really haven't found the edges of this thing yet. But my expectation is, you know, in an evolving story, you don't necessarily drill the very best holes in the very first two holes that you drill. So we're still learning about what the size, scale and quality of this project looks like.
So the long and short of it is, it's a long discovery. It's 2.6 kilometres thus far, albeit you haven't infilled it, of course, but you've outlined it over a length of 2.6 kilometres. Those intersections, 100 odd metres, very wide intersections of mineralisation over a very long strike length, open a long strike. So you'd have to say, based on what you know, this is a very large mineralised system. Yes?
Yes. And that, I think, is one of the most exciting things about it is, you know, from the length of the mineralisation we've seen so far, from the intersections that we've got so far, it looks to us like we're in a significant mineralised system here. And these mineralised systems in the Cobar Basin, which is where we're talking about, have extraordinary strike length. So, you know, this could be significantly larger than the 2.6 kilometres that we've drilled so far.
Is there an anomaly or geophysics that suggests you how long it could go for?
Well, we own tenure for another 10 kilometres along strike from the zone that we've been drilling so far. We've done some geophysics out to another couple of kilometres along strike, and there is an anomaly there. that looks very similar to the one that we've been drilling so far. But geophysical anomalies need to be proven by drill holes, and we haven't got to that yet. We're just focused on what we've defined so far. But we'll get to that over the course of this year.
So you've got clearly what is a huge mineralised system. It's just a question of how big it is now. Questions of continuity of mineralisation will only come with infill drilling. What about grade?
So grade's at the lower end of the scale at this point in time, but size compensates you for lower grade. And in these kinds of systems, you can search around for higher grade material, and there are some indicators, albeit very early stages, there are some indicators so far that, you know, some higher grade material will be available somewhere within the system, but we just don't know where it is yet.
So you still got to try to close in, hopefully, on some higher grade zones that would obviously have a massive impact on the economics of the project. You wouldn't have any idea where they are yet, would you, presumably?
No, we've got geological indicators and vectors towards where they would be in a system like this, but we haven't drilled those holes yet. And the other thing I think that is worthwhile mentioning is, you know, that 208-metre intersection that I spoke about a moment ago, that's from 40 metres downhole down to 250 metres downhole. So, you know, it's pretty shallow where we have drilled it in the shallow part. So we've still got to come up dip and find the shallowest piece of the mineralisation, which is obviously economically better because there's less stripping to do in an open pit environment.
But if you're going to chase it up dip and it's already at 40 metres, does this thing going to outcrop?
We have some areas that you can walk across the ground and see the gossan on the ground and rock chip it, and it goes 1.5% lead and 10 or 15 grams of silver at surface. So we were after some depth extension first, and then we're coming back to that near surface environment probably in the April period when the drill rig comes back after it's done a job at another project that we're working on.
Now, let's talk about that. So you said you finished the February drilling program at Rip and Tear. The rig's moved up the road to your other project. What's happening up there?
So, yeah, the other project is a project called Durnings. We drilled some holes at Durnings pre-Christmas time, drilled six holes, got six intersections, the best of which is 40 metres at about... and I'll talk in gold equivalent terms now, it's at about 2.2 grams per tonne gold with a high-grade intersection over 6 meters.
But it's another lead, zinc, silver, like Rip and Tear?
No, it's slightly different, more in keeping with the style that you get in this Cobar Basin. So it's lead, zinc, silver, gold, copper in about equal parts, equal value parts. So multi-element, multi-phase kind of mineralisation. As I said, we drilled six holes pre-Christmas time. All the assays are back there, and the drill rig will finish at Rip and Tear. The diamond rig will finish at Rip and Tear over this weekend and be there at Durnings early next week. The RC rig turns up on the 5th of March. So, you know, we're following up those high-grade intersections at Durnings in the March and April period. So the message really, I think, is, you know, watch this space during March and April for what those results look like.
How far apart is Durnings and Rip and Tear?
Oh, they're about 30 kilometres by road. So one's a little north and one's a little south of an operation.
So ultimately they would all feed into a central production plant?
Most likely.
So you really are looking at something that's going to have huge tonnage?
I'm expecting it's going to be of significant scale. Now, whether that proves to be multiple millions of tonnes per annum, well, we've got a bit more work to do before we start putting numbers around that. But, yeah, my expectation is going to be significant in size.
And how's the market for lead? We hear a lot about zinc. The market for zinc seems to be, the consensus seems to be quite bullish along with copper, given its role in the whole, you know, energy transition, as they say. But what about lead? What's the future for lead?
Well, it's a combination of the two. So there's lead and silver. Lead is really, its main source is still battery, stationary batteries particularly because of the weight. So less so in electric vehicles and those sort of things. But all these stationary batteries, you know, these lead acid batteries that are in petrol driven cars these days, are having a significant portion of the market with in stationary battery kind of technology. So I still think there's a strong market for lead, and I expect that, you know, energy transition will play a significant role in that for lead demand.
Now, they're in older style batteries, as you say, Andrew, but silver seems to have a resurgence on the back of its role in more technology focused applications.
Yeah, so silver has the is the most conductive metal of all metals. So its use in solar panels, its use in circuitry is growing very strongly, particularly in the solar panel market. So, you know, I think silver has a strong future, a strong demand ahead of it with the energy transition.
So as this discovery grows and evolves, as you rightly say, are you getting any early stage approaches from people who would be, you know, bigger companies that would see this as being a project that could move the dial for them?
Well, it's still an exploration discovery at this stage, Paul. I think most of the sizable guys are watch and learn kind of guys. They stay in the background significantly, so no immediate approaches, but I expect that we'll be on the radar screen as more and more of these kinds of results that we've been putting out recently start to filter out into the broader market. So, you know, yes, but there's been nothing official come through the door.
Now, it'd be remiss of me if I didn't mention that you have a chap who's known to have deep pockets himself on the register, Mr. Kerry Harmanis. Kerry's pretty keen on this discovery. He's been here before. He was the driving force behind Jubilee, among others. Shareholders made a lot of money out of the nickel discoveries of Jubilee. What's Kerry's view of this?
Kerry's very excited about it. I probably speak to Kerry 5 or 6 times a week, and he's always keen to find out, well, what's the latest thing that's going on, Andrew? And you know, to give you an indication, this is the only junior company board that Kerry sits on. So he's very bullish.
And what's his stake
on this? Between 18 and 19% currently, 18.6, I think.
Well, he doesn't do things by halves, does he? If he's in for a penny, he's in for the pound. So I have heard him talking about it at various investor shows and the like. He brings his inimitable energy and enthusiasm to the show. I have heard him talking to people about why he thinks this could be so significant, but he's a big believer in geology, isn't he, doing the hard work below the waterline.
He's probably the best amateur geologist that I've come across. So he's very focused on making Talisman, and through Talisman, you know, the Rip and Tear project and perhaps the Durnings project, a major success. I think he retired 10 or 15 years ago, and it didn't really sit as comfortably with him as he was hoping. And so he's back in the chair and back in the saddle to make this the second Jubilee of his career.
So how do the economics for an investor stack up at Talisman, Andrew? What market cap-wise, cash in the bank, et cetera?
So we have about $8 million cash in the bank. We also have an iron ore royalty coming from a project in the Pilbara run by MinRes. So we get about $2 million a quarter from that currently. So we maintain about that $8 million cash float. And we're spending $7 to $9 million on exploration a year, 188 million shares on issue, 8 million cash, got a market cap of $34 million today. So, you know, enterprise value of about 26, and a royalty stream that will fund everything that we have ambition to do in the near future.
So the upside here, the leverage is huge. If you've got a discovery that shapes up as being economic here, Rip and Tear, and at Durnings combined, at $34 million, you'd have to think there's plenty of upside in the market cap.
With some even moderate success at these two projects, and remember we have 6,000 square kilometres of ground there, and we're only really assessed 4 of the first dozen projects that we identified. So I think the leverage is fantastic for moderate uplift, even if we are moderately successful in what we've got so far.
So let's wind up here with a rough assessment, or Andrew, of what sort of news flow is coming. Well, you said there's some samples in the lab now.
Sure. So we have a number of drill holes, four or five of them, that are in the laboratory from Rip and Tear, and they'll come to the market over March.
And they're the ones that will let you know that you've extended this up to 2.6 kilometres.
That's correct. And whether the thing is 500 metres wide or 200 metres wide. So, you know, we're trying to get some scale by the end of March on what Rip and Tear might be. And the assay results from the drilling we're about to start at Durnings will probably be hitting the market late March, early April is my expectation, if it goes as it normally does.
Andrew, it sounds like you're onto something very big. It's just a question of how large, and obviously the old issue of what the grade is, but of course enough tonnes will offset lower grade. And given that the Durnings results would seem to be higher grade, you could put them together and one sort of averages out the other and you end up with something very attractive.
Yeah, the best of both worlds. You get the economies of scale and you get a sweetener from Durnings perhaps that can boost the grade over time.
If someone doesn't take you out in the meantime.
Yeah, you said that, Paul.
Andrew, thanks very much for your time. Look forward to the results that are coming down the track. It obviously looks like you're onto something really big. It's, as I say, it's just a question of grade, isn't it now, and continuity. And only time will tell. Once you put the lie detector into it with the drill rig, we'll know a whole lot more over the next 3 or 4 months by the sounds of it.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a fair summary of it.
Thanks for your time.
A pleasure, Paul.
You've been listening to The Whole Truth, a Resources Rising Stars podcast, produced by Resource Media, hosted by Paul Armstrong for Reed Corporate. Please note that Reed Corporate does not provide investment advice, and investors should seek personalised advice before making any investment decisions.